Hello and welcome to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely in a world given back to us. We would like to right off the bat thank everyone for the amazing support we've had in our first month. Already our listens are well beyond where we expected to be. And we know that's more to your credit than to ours. And so to everyone who has been sharing or rating or reviewing or in any way helping to get the word out about the podcast, we give you our thanks. And we do encourage you to continue doing so. It's greatly appreciated, and we always love to have more voices in the conversation. So if you get a chance, if you're digging the podcast, if you'd like to review it on iTunes or elsewhere, that would probably be one of the best ways that you can help us continue to grow here at Let the Bird Fly. We have a number of guests in the office, in the studio with us today. We'll try to go around and let them introduce themselves briefly without knocking over too many mics or pulling out any cords. And so we'll start with oldest and go to the youngest. Maybe you can just give your name and say hello.
My name's Nicholas, a seventh grader. Hello.
I am Ziggy. I'm in sixth grade.
I am Oliva. I'm in fifth grade.
I'm Anna, and I'm in third grade.
Hello, I'm Sophia, and I'm in first.
And Sophie's still getting her podcast voice. I think that was pretty good, but we're going to let her try one more time with her extra loud Sophia voice.
Hello, I'm Sophia, and I'm in first grade.
Excellent. You nailed it, Sophia. Great job. We're also very happy to have with us via Skype. I don't know how people like to roll on that one. Our first not-in-studio guest, Pastor Kyle Madsen. I won't steal too much of his thunder. Kyle, why don't you just briefly introduce yourself to our listeners?
Wade got my name right. I am Kyle Madsen. I live in Weatherford, Texas, which is west of Fort Worth, about 25 minutes. I am a pastor of a mission congregation that started up roughly 4 years ago in this neck of the woods. My family and I are living down here. We have five children. God's been gracious that way. And we happen to know both the Hermanson family quite well. They were here when we moved here. And also the Johnston family. We were in Michigan before we came here. So we got to know both of those families quite well.
Well, Kyle, we're happy to have you with us today as we'll be kind of looking at the Guys Get Divine Mercy as we'll be talking about the congregation that you've started down there. As usual, we do want to make sure to get our disclaimer out in front so we don't end up getting sued. Or if we do, we can at least say we tried. Peter, why don't you go ahead with the disclaimer?
This show does not speak for our churches, our church bodies, or our employers. To be honest, much of the time, it probably doesn't speak for us. We will be thinking out loud a lot, so approach what you hear with a healthy bit of skepticism because, well, as a responsible resident of planet Earth, that's probably what you should generally do with almost everything. If you find yourself getting too worked up, tune out, look around, and realize you were just listening to a podcast. That's right, a podcast. So go live freely, friends, and don't let us get in the way.
Our scripture narrative for today is taken from John chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. We're recording this on what's called Good Shepherd Sunday in the church year. This was the passage, the gospel lesson that our pastor preached on this morning and also used for his devotion at our elders meeting the other day. I'm privileged to serve as an elder at our church. And Peter, I figured I might as well tell you now. We did decide yesterday to go ahead and excommunicate you. It wasn't anything you had done yet, but I brought up some potential sins I'm worried about you maybe committing, and we just thought maybe we'd get out ahead of this.
It's probably better safe than sorry.
Avoid having a future meeting. So, yeah, you're still welcome to come to church, but we're not going to be able to give you the sacrament in lieu of sins yet to come. I want to make sure that we can keep sanctification strong at the church, and so this is just our best effort for that.
I trust my wife remains in good standing.
Oh, of course. Yeah. She puts up with
just
you.
Just another way we're divided.
Yeah, she might be what we advertise now.
Is this like Minority Report, except with church discipline? You can put somebody for the future commission of unrepentant sin?
There you go.
I like it. You know, I'm not a big fan of meetings, and so I think it really helps to cut down on them. preemptive discipline. It's like the neocon version of church discipline. What I have though is John 10:1-10, and I'll just briefly read through that and then just get at the comments that I found helpful, some of which my pastor shared. Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs in by any other way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." And what our pastor had shared in the meeting I thought was helpful, and it wasn't original to him, but it was from a devotion written by a Swedish theologian and bishop from the past, Bo Geertz, and it's from a book, To Live with Christ, which was put out by Concordia Publishing House. We can put it in the show notes. And translated by a man named Richard Wood, but also Broer Erickson, who is a friend of mine, and I've worked with him on a number of projects in the past, including another book by Bo Geertz that he translated, Then Fell the Lord's Fire, which was published by Magdeburg Press, but now is with New Reformation Publications. But this is what Geertz had to say. He says, "Many imagine the shepherd's life in much the same way as the perfumed aristocrats did in the idyllic poems of the 1700s, where the sheep are wonderfully combed and gentle, snuggling up to an appealing shepherd with soft white hands that have been miraculously protected from the sunlight and the rough stones of the desert." And then goes on to make some observations about what shepherd life actually would have been like and how it in many ways was on the fringes and a dirty task. And I think if we think of the Old Testament, God's people almost always, especially in the early part, are outside the cities. In fact, when they go into Egypt, they settle outside the cities. They're a shepherd people. And in many ways, the shepherd's task then was to be on the fringes, and to be getting dirty, to be getting messy as he cared for his sheep. And as we'll be talking to Pastor Madsen about his work with the mission in Texas, that's really what all pastors are called to do. Not to recoil away from or pull back from the fringes, from the lost sheep, from the rocky and dirty places, but to go forth and to find those sheep where they are, and to teach them the good shepherd, the ultimate shepherd's voice. I was in Croatia a couple years ago, and I mentioned this on something that's up, a blog post on the website for those who want to look, but I was privileged to present at a conference on a theologian I study, Matthias Flacius Illyricus, and there's about 10 people in the world who care about him, and so they were at this conference in Croatia. And a buddy of mine came with me, and we got to go to an island, to a little village of 42 people where his ancestors came from, and we met his cousins and had dinner with them. And they were talking about how they had sheep, and yet they live in the village, and I was thinking, well, where are they keeping these sheep? And they said they just live out in the woods, but they each go out and they call them, and their sheep will come. And the wife had her own sheep, and the husband had his own sheep, and the sheep would only come for them, for the one whose voice they knew. And so we rejoice for pastors like Pastor Madsen and for lay people in the church, too, who are going and finding the sheep where they are and speaking to them and teaching them to learn the shepherd's voice. Sheep don't have a whole lot going for them. They're not very good at fighting. They taste delicious. They're fluffy. They don't look threatening at all. But the one thing they have, and God keeps coming back to this, is that ability to listen, to hear. And so God sends preachers to put his word in their ears, to protect, to nourish, and to lead and guide them, as we're reminded in Psalm 23, which many churches grounded in the church year sang today for this Good Shepherd Sunday. So as we get a little bit into later what it's like to be a confessional Lutheran mission in the heart of Texas, which isn't a state necessarily associated with Lutheranism, it's a good reminder, I think, to keep in mind, and for us as well, those of us who aren't called primarily to be preachers, myself included now as I'm teaching, that in our own lives, as bishops and apostles, as Luther says, in our own homes, with our own children, but also as co-workers, wherever we may be in our vocations, to help find the sheep where they're at and to point them to the Savior's voice in which alone there is life. So having covered Peter's preemptive excommunication, I kind of just want to have communion right now just to watch Peter not be able to have it, but we won't do that. But having covered that, but more importantly, that Christ is our good shepherd who has laid down his life for the sheep, we will make our way into our free-for-all, which Peter will set the stage for.
And we're back with our free-for-all for the week, where we wrestle with the pressing questions of life and attempt to answer them once and for all. This week, we're looking at another pressing question. This is a sports question. We kind of seem to be stuck a little bit on sports, but the overarching question is, or the theme is, rivalries, do's and don'ts. So to give a couple of questions, and then we'll let our guest, Pastor Madsen, start us off here. Questions such as, is it okay to root for a team who beats your team in the playoffs? Or is it okay to root for a team that is in your division once your team is out of the playoffs? So maybe to start us off, Pastor Madsen, you can tell us where your allegiances lie, should you have any, and then take your first stab at the pressing question of rivalry, do's and don'ts.
Well, I think I should jump in real quick, Kyle. Hopefully you're still there. We have to ask our most important question. You don't have to give your allegiance just yet, Kyle. It'll come out later. But I want to see if you fall on the right side or the wrong side. I'm part of the remnant, I suppose, in this one. Designated hitter or pitcher's batting?
Oh, designated hitter.
Amen.
So the Texas heat is getting to you, I see. Maybe this wasn't such a good idea to have him on.
I was wise to a designated hitter long before I moved to Texas, Peter.
any particular reason for the designated hitter? I'm hoping some will align with my own.
Oh, designated hitter should be there because other than two pitchers in the National League, they're automatic outs. So then the National League should just play with eight batters altogether, and we could shorten those games. And if we did that, then maybe that would be a better. Maybe that's what I would be for, is an eight batter lineup. But
hashtag eight batters. We can add that to our our time zone campaign.
If you disagree with Pastor Madsen, you can email us at pastormadsenswrong@lettheburnfly.com.
I like it. We'll let you introduce your allegiances then.
Hashtag.
We'll let you introduce your allegiances then, maybe perhaps, and then any thoughts you have maybe with those allegiances or anything else on any big rivalries that come to mind for your teams.
Because I'm a Lutheran, I subscribe to the theology of the cross, but my cross when it comes to sports allegiances is that I'm from Minnesota and a hopeless fan of all of their products, really. Some more than others, I suppose, but the Twins were losing 7-6 to the Red Sox in the third of their three-game series with them. Ziggy has been interested in that, so I've been keeping him updated, but Gophers and Vikings, Wild to the degree that I follow hockey, and Timberwolves to the degree that I can stomach keeping up with our NBA team at all. So,
what about the Loons?
The who?
The Loons.
Yes, of course. They're from Minnesota. I
yes.
cheer for them too.
MLS, new MLS team, professional soccer.
Yes, that's why that was lost on me. I hear there's a team in North Dallas too, but I don't really know their name either.
You mean a soccer team?
Correct. Oh, yes. Okay.
I thought you maybe were talking about. I hear there's a hockey team in Dallas somewhere as well, but I can't remember their name either.
So, yeah, we don't speak of them.
So is it legal to play soccer in Texas?
Oh, yeah. There are some pretty good soccer players, as I understand, in Texas. I don't. Huh. I suppose it's just the population has increased enough that they can not become martyrs to the football persuasion. But yeah, there's some pretty good soccer populace here. Huh.
I thought maybe the Texans would think that was one step away from communism.
Well, I can't say that there aren't some Texans that do, but not, believe it or not, Wade, not everybody that lives here anymore is from here. And sometimes we're reminded of that, but
is there any with your teams involved, I have a guess what might come to mind. Any growing up being a fan of Minnesota sports, or at least whatever you want to call that they do in Minnesota, with balls and pucks and that. What's the biggest rivalry growing up for you that you just came to mind? A team that you wanted your team to beat, or a team that you just love to see lose?
Oh, I suppose we can. Yeah, the cat's probably out of the bag on that one. I would probably the most feverish one would be Packers Vikings. For me anyway, a close second is probably Gopher Badger. But I don't know. I suppose the Gopher Badger one, to some degree or another, is built up on neither state is big enough that there's a major other in-state rival. I know Wade's from Michigan, so Michigan can stay in-state to find its next biggest rival for the most part. But in Minnesota and Wisconsin, that you kind of have to go next door to find that, so...
Are the Gophers on strike right now, or suspended, or anything like that, or have they managed to keep it clean for a few months?
Well, which program are you talking about?
Oh, just anything, University of Minnesota. Most weren't operational, last I heard.
Well, I will say, Wade, we were so desperate with our football program that we had to go to Michigan to find a coach. So that's, I don't know. We'll see how that turns out, but he came from Western Michigan, so maybe he'll be fine.
Wade. I was happy that you guys took him as a Central Michigan grad. Fire up chips! I was happy to see the Broncos, our rival, lose their stud coach.
I just want to ask here: can you consider it a rivalry if it's so consistently one-sided? I mean, I'm thinking about the Packer Viking question or the Badger Gopher question.
Well, one side can always consider it a rivalry. The other side might consider it like a little pet, I suppose. But
I'm not sure if we just lost Pastor Madsen there. But I thought perhaps maybe we could go around and see. I don't know if all of the kids have thoughts, but those who have thoughts, maybe we can start over here with Ziggy and then go to Nick and see who wants to jump in. Maybe not rivalry, but if there's one team. Or maybe a couple teams you can, if you have your biggest rivalry, a team that you like to see lose, what comes to mind for you, gentlemen? Ziggy, why don't you step up here and you can go first. If there's a team you like to see lose, or just what you think the biggest rivalry you have.
The biggest rivalry I can think of is probably Lions-Packers, or either Michigan or Michigan State and Ohio State. But the team that I like to see lose most, probably the Packers.
Seems like there's a theme here.
Again, Ziggy, I'd ask, is it a rivalry if it's so consistently one-sided?
If you want it to.
They've been splitting lately, and if it weren't for a Hail Mary on a supposed face mask, we'd be dominating the series lately, but I know it's illegal to almost touch Aaron Rodgers. Nicholas, do you have a big rivalry or a team you like to see lose that comes to mind?
I guess a rivalry would be Lions-Packers, and in college, which is less important, you could say, Michigan-Ohio State. A team I would always like to see lose is whatever bandwagon is popular, whether it be the Cowboys last year or just the Patriots in general.
And Oliva, you're standing up. I'm curious to get your take on this. Any thoughts?
The team that I would like to see lose most is Packers.
We are just, there's a lot of Packer hate. Ben is just rubbing his forehead. He seems a little bit perturbed here. I'm guessing he can take comfort in the fact that the Packers have, what are those things called when you win the Super Bowl? Trophies that I suppose he can fall back on. Yeah. I will say personally, I thought a lot about biggest rivalry, and there's just not a lot of big rivalries for a lot of the Detroit sports teams. You know, the Tigers have the teams that we like to beat. But I think, you know, the closest would maybe be the Yankees. Whenever they've made a deep playoff run, it was through the Yankees, and it's always fun to see the Yankees lose. But I think the biggest, both boys hit on it, would be seeing anything from Ohio lose. Always brings me great joy. I'm a Michigan State fan, but I'll pull for Michigan so long as they're not playing State. And I'll always pull for the Big Ten, with the exception of Ohio State. I think Ohio State's really an SEC team that's made its way into the Big Ten, and that just fits with probably the team I like to see lose most is any team from the SEC. I had some members, wonderful members, when I served in Michigan who were from Alabama, and we were able to give some grief back and forth. But probably Alabama is one of the hardest teams to be upset with because they just don't lose, and you want to see them lose, and so you got to really savor it when it happens. But I would say probably for baseball to see the Yankees lose, and then probably any sport to see the SEC lose. As far as the Packers, I just grew up with us taking a beating from them, so it's hard for me to go in expecting them to lose. I mostly just hope either the Lions win or lose in such a way that I don't have to listen to as much grief during the week. But I will say, it's been a pretty even series lately, and with the exception of a few calls, our boys are starting to hold their own. I think we're on the uptick. I'm not quite sure about Green Bay. I know Thompson's finding CFL players, you know, now to fill spots. But this could be an interesting year. The Vikings, I'm looking forward to. I think their stadium may still kill birds with all the glass. That'll be exciting.
It's leaking like a sieve now, too. Did you hear that? Brand new?
Is it now? I heard there was a problem with the windows. That must be.
Did we have the same problem that the Brewers had with building their stadium? I mean, people died when that one was going up, so that was a shame.
That's a little too soon, please.
Yeah. That was commitment, too. That was commitment. Well, I think, Peter, we know a little bit your allegiances, but any big rivalry or team you like to see lose?
Well, I can't go against this popular sentiment here that the Packers should always lose. You know, growing up, my family's all Packers fans, and I was born in Wisconsin. So I remember when I was younger, really enjoying watching football, and I would say, I cheer for the Vikings and for the Packers, except for when they're playing together, I cheer for the Vikings alone. And then I realized they're in the same division, they play each other twice a year, and that if the Packers won, that was bad for the Vikings. And then I started to hate them. Seriously hate them, and it didn't go so well with my family. I think there were probably a few nights I had to sleep outside in the garage because my dad was upset about a Vikings victory, certainly. But you know, yeah, I don't know what it is about sports, but it just you know, or I shouldn't say sports, really fandom. It just allows you to kind of have those joyous moments of you know, hate towards others. So yeah, Packers should lose.
Well, and it is. I think it is partly you have the sentiments in the room of people who, if you're a fan of someone besides the Packers, probably maybe the Cowboys in Texas might be similar, but it's very hard to live in the state and see people on Mondays when the Packers are consistently winning, and especially when they beat your team. And so even if you were somewhat indifferent, the grief you tend to get afterwards somewhat hardens you. I remember going to college, and I went to college in Minnesota, but a lot of the people were from Wisconsin, and every time the Packers would score a touchdown, people just running down the hall. And so we had a group of Michiganders, Lions fans on the end, and we finally took a rope, and we would tighten it when they would run, and they would just all trip over. And so that we got a little bit of retribution that way, but it didn't make the sting of Barry Sanders retiring or 0-16 and all these other legacies sting a little bit less. I guess, kids, anything else on this? Otherwise, we can maybe make our way into the main topic.
Well, every time I see the Browns lose, whenever the kids at school brag about the Packers winning, I can just say, we're not the Browns.
That is true. The Browns supposedly are having a good offseason, but that is I remember a buddy of mine for his honeymoon, we went down to watch the Lions play the Browns in Cleveland. And it was oddly comforting to kind of be able to stroll around as like, oh, we're the organization that has stuff together in Cleveland. By the way, drunkest game I've ever been to. Not me, but just the crowd was unbelievable. They were fun, but out of all the football stadiums I've been to, either Cleveland really loves its alcohol or just does not hold it well. I don't want to lose our Ohio demographic, but I don't want to not speak truth about Ohio as well. Nicholas, you look like you maybe have something to say.
Would you say that the Browns fans would be drinking because of their loss?
I would guess it would be similar to going to the Silverdome back in the day with people with brown bags over their head. And just you never went to a Lions game in the Silverdome that there was not some sort of fight or just arguments about, you know, who was more embarrassed by their team. trying to go out the Silverdome was always interesting. They had the air that kept the doors open, and you'd go through the revolving doors. And if they lost, you were just waiting there to go out, you know, two by two. And you could just feel like all it would take was just one thing to spark an angry riot. And, you know, just the collective sadness was hard to compare. But, yeah, I do thank the Browns for that. You get other sports. Used to be able to thank the Cubs. No longer can do that. I think they may be the most insufferable fans now. Ben, you have thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I was going to pick them as my team that I'd like to see lose the most. Up until recently, it didn't bother me so much, but I had lived in Chicago for a few years, and there were probably about one quarter of the Cubs fans there are now all of a sudden. So,
yeah, I apologize, Ben. I hadn't thought of I know you like to speak when you like to speak, and so I didn't want to make you a man of many words. That would be your number one, then, would be the Cubs?
Yes, absolutely, especially in light of their recent success.
As a Packer fan, do you much get into the Bears thing anymore, or they just haven't been a threat in so long it's hard to get pumped for that?
Yeah, it's been kind of a non-issue, but now that Cutler's gone, who knows, they might be, he was the best player on the Packers, so, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Well, I think we've covered a fair amount in our free-for-all today, and with that, I think maybe we can make our way into our main topic. All right, Kyle, you mentioned at the beginning we have a little bit of history with both Peter and I. I wanted to lead off the serious discussion for our main topic with a few questions. I apologize. I must not have had time to run these by you. But maybe we'll just kind of quickly make our way through. First, now that you've been down there, you've become acclimated. Texas, state or country?
I know it as a state, but I'm learning to appreciate more and more the independent streak. Peter can appreciate it too. He lived here twice as long as I have, even yet more so than that. But they're a proud people.
that's indeed true. We have a good constituency for Let the Bird Fly in Texas too. Maybe it's just Kyle continuously downloading our episodes.
That could be. We'll see if that keeps up after this episode.
It's my children. Can't get enough.
What do you think is better, having come from the Midwest, Lutheran guilt or Texas swagger?
Ooh, that's a good question. Texas definitely carries some swagger in their bling, but a Lutheran knows how to put their head down too and keep it there. That might be the rivalry that beats all of them that we've talked about so far, Wade.
what about how does the Minnesota passive aggressiveness go over? Is it appreciated at all, or people just don't pick up on it?
Oh, I mean, I don't hate it here that bad.
I like it.
No.
Oh, sure, it's good. It's good down here.
The next one I think is the most important, Kyle. Does your wife want to go to a Tigers game with me?
Why don't you ask her? She's sitting right here.
We had a little backstory on that when Kyle served in Michigan with me. we were thinking about going down to see the Twins play the Tigers, and I used to, in my phone, I'd always, when there was a couple, I would try to put the husband first and then the wife second, so I could always remember whose number was what, and that wasn't anything, you know, chauvinistic or whatever. It was just my system, and I must have put their numbers in backwards. And so I didn't realize I was texting with his wife and asked her out on a date, but it worked out all right. But seriously, though, if she does want to go to a Tigers game, just do let me know, Kyle.
You will be the first to know.
Excellent.
We still don't care too much for the Tigers, but maybe my company will be enough to drive her anywhere. So
I can only hope. If I know many churches in the front have the U.S. flag and the Christian flag in their sanctuaries, and that's for a whole another episode. I'm just curious, where do they tend to put the Texas flag, and how much bigger than the others is it?
Well, the Texas flag maybe would cover the altar, and then
is that for certain festivals or just year round?
Yeah, that trumps all liturgical year, so that would just be there all the time, I think.
The pyramids aren't necessary; we just have the Texas flag draped over everything.
if you are from Texas, do you need a passport to go to California?
Oh, nobody from Texas would ever want to go to California. The conversation would never come up.
If Tony Romo were Jesus, would the Passion have ended when Jesus was arrested or injured?
Are you saying he's not Jesus?
I was just curious if he would have made it to the cross or, you know, thrown his back out or something in Gethsemane when he was praying. Sorry. I know Tony Romo now is not a Cowboy anymore. Am I correct in that?
He's part of the CBS family. Yes, he told everyone by Twitter, as I understand. I don't live there, but Twitter, that is.
Do you know if he made the cut for the U.S. Open?
That's right.
I don't know the answer to that yet. I've been. You're asking if he's going to be on the golf coverage too.
Right.
He's trying to qualify for the U.S. Open.
For the Open?
Yeah, I guess he's a really good golfer.
He hasn't called to play with me. I'm kind of waiting. I'm waiting on that yet. He and Jordan Spieth. I'm waiting for those calls any day now. But I don't know. I didn't know he was trying to qualify, but I do believe that's true, that he plays quite well.
You don't play golf yourself, though, do you, Pastor Manson?
No. Who would ever make time for something like that? Wade wouldn't make fun of my pink shorts anymore if he knew what other kind of shorts I wore. But
that actually brings me to my next question, which was, has anyone ever mistaken you for a female pastor when you wore your pink shorts you used to wear in Michigan?
I just make sure my voice sounds very low when I wear my pink shorts.
To be clear, it did display a lot of masculine confidence, but Pastor Manson and I used to do we would team up for Bible studies at a brewery in town, and I think you even rocked them for one of those, if I'm not mistaken, and I was impressed. So,
I don't know if I owned them back then. It must have been another pair of shorts that you wish you could wear but couldn't wear that you were looking out of mine.
Well, I could wear them around one leg, I think, maybe. But I think they would be great for, what is that, the third Sunday in Lent? Is that the pink Sunday?
Rose. I think we call it Rose, but
Rose.
Yes.
Couple more and then we'll stop. But do people become Republicans at birth or by baptism in Texas?
I'm not sure about that. Although some of them might not become Texans until they're at the age of reason then. So that might be taking a lot of chances with Texas citizenship if we did it that way. So
my last one is pretty straightforward. Are there any situations where you aren't allowed to shoot people in Texas?
Well, I think we're still trying to figure that out. It might be a bit of trial and error in some instances, but I don't myself own, so I'm not contributing to the pilot.
So what do you do when you start the service? I kind of figured you guys all kind of shot in the air. just the congregation does that, or?
Yeah, I just lasso outside, Professor Johnson. I just run my lasso outside, and everybody knows that's time.
Well, I that's all the questions I have, unless Peter has more. But Peter knows Texas. I've been there twice to present. I was down, actually, got to stay with Pastor Mattson for the ELS Youth Conference. But I think Texas is a real thing for Peter. For me, it was just 2 weekends in which I realized I'm way too fat for the kind of heat that Texas has, and also way too afraid of things that fly at me for the bird-like bugs that just come out at you as you walk in a Texas evening.
Did you notice those more in Houston or where we were in Dallas, the bugs that fly at you?
I think it was more on the campus in Dallas. Well, no, the Dallas was the cockroach type things. I don't know if those were cockroaches or not, but those things, I danced for the first time in years each time I saw one of those. So
I had a neighbor that in Texas that would, he'd say, no, we don't call those cockroaches. Those are water bugs because we're sophisticated.
Peter was the one that assured me right when we were moving down here that if you're from up north or if you live up north and you spray for bugs in your house, you have a dirty house. But if you live in Texas and you don't spray for bugs, you have a dirty house.
We'll have to save it for another day, but I'm curious. Sometime maybe we'll have you back on, Kyle. Any good snake stories you guys have? I told my wife when we got our first call to Michigan that I would never take a call after that when I had a SATA anywhere that has snakes or, you know, real snakes, not like gardener snakes. I'm terrified of them. And so just the thought of finding one in my house or my car is enough to make my skin crawl. But I think I've bombarded you with pointless questions long enough. I just briefly, maybe once again, if, you know, I've mentioned the ELS, if you could just maybe help our listeners understand, first, what is the Evangelical Lutheran Synod? Those of us gathered in the room here are Wisconsin Synod Lutherans. We have a number of friends who are Missouri Synod Lutherans. The biggest Lutheran denomination in the country is the ELCA. Maybe a little bit about the ELS and then about what the ELS is trying to do in Weatherford, Texas.
Sure. The ELS are, you know, its origins or its auspices are Lutherans who came from Norway. So where the two synods that you mentioned, Wisconsin and Missouri, both would have had Lutherans who came to this country from Germany. So our beginnings were from Norwegian immigrants. We came largely because we couldn't grow potatoes on the desolate lands of Norway anymore. And so found our way here. We found Lutherans here, and the Lutherans that the Norwegians found here were the German Lutherans, particularly the ones in and around St. Louis, so the Missouri synods, and they heard a familiar confession. It was actually Walther who encouraged them not to just kind of get swallowed up their heritage and their Norwegian Lutheranness, if you will, into Missouri, but to walk alongside them and remain Lutheran, but remain their own kind of their own distinct heritage. And that is kind of what the ELS is now, I would say. Not without its own troubles. We became very good at being pietists, and so that was a large strain and struggle, but by God's grace there was a small remnant that lived through that in the early 1900s too. So it's about 120 churches. We're definitely not in every state in the United States. We have our mission here in Texas makes 3 different churches now here in Texas. How did I do with that?
I think very
Johnson?
Good. Just that briefly, at ELS, right? Evangelical Lutheran Synod, for those who don't know the acronyms.
Correct. Evangelical Lutheran Synod, and we do well to keep remembering what the evangelical part of that means. So,
and for anyone who's interested in that, we'll add that into the show notes, so you can find a link to the synod's website. Show notes, by the way, this will be episode 8, so they'll be at letthebirdfly.com/8 if you're looking for those.
I guess, Kyle, that takes us to maybe a little bit about your church. I know your church has an interesting name, a name that you chose that I think reflects well what you want to be about, but maybe not a name I've heard a lot of for a lot of other churches, but maybe just the name of your church, and then what kind of you guys see your church being, how you're presenting yourself to the community. I know you're a church that is appreciating and operating with the historic liturgy of the church, as most of us would find in our hymnals. But just who you guys see yourselves being and what kind of voice and light you want to be in the community.
Sure. So the name of the church is Divine Mercy Lutheran Church. I can confidently say naming a church was never something we were taught in seminary. Perhaps Pastor Johnston can say the same thing. And so I didn't ever think I would be called or asked to start a home mission, so I didn't think it would ever come up. But that was one of the first things I was assigned after I accepted the call here was I was told you'll have to come up with a name for a church. So that was a unique task to say it light, to say it lightly.
And they wouldn't let you name it after yourself, correct?
Yeah, and I tried that 3 times. And all times it was rejected.
Did you try anything like River Creek of the Crossroad Bridge, super awesome church?
I tried all of those, but they were taken all right here in the same county. But what I knew that I wanted was something that was kind of, it's funny you bring that up, Wade, but just something different than what most new churches are using, which generally speaking has, maybe a geographic characteristic and then something that is sort of warm and fuzzy feeling. And I just wanted it to be different by its very nature. And then after that, I guess I would say probably what I was reading or spending a little time in at the time mattered to some degree. So there's a great devotional that was translated maybe in the late 90s or early 2000s. It's a Johann Gerhardt devotional called Meditations on Divine Mercy. And that was just kind of kept ringing in my ears. So it's not overly profound, but that's kind of where that name came from.
And with that in mind, I think that's a great name. How do you see that conveying to the community what you guys are about? I think one of the neat things about that is just knowing the landscape of American Christianity in general, and I can only imagine, honestly only imagine, because I've not been in Texas enough, the church climate in Texas where there is so much emphasis on, the Christian is one who is doing things or behaving a certain way or wearing certain things or listening to certain things, or Christianity is life improvement. I think you have down the road, in Houston, Joel Osteen, and probably I think the worst Christian book title ever, My Best Life Now, which seems to run counter to everything in the scriptures and reminds me always of the story of the rich man and Lazarus. But what do you think your name has to say? And just this is knowing you, Kyle. What your name has to say about what you want that church to be, what you want people to remember if they come in contact with it, and things of that nature.
Yeah, I guess more than anything else, I expect it to elicit questions or just kind of make somebody at least think inside, if they don't say it out loud, what do we mean by mercy? What does that word mean? And so it just sort of, if nothing else, it will beg that word to be unpacked, and then it has done its job. Whether or not somebody asks it out loud or if it just kind of circles around in their mind a little bit, what do we mean by the mercy of God? I also like then the opportunity to just say one of the most biblical, succinct prayers that can be found is just maybe what we know as the Kyrie, but if you don't know it that way, you just know constantly throughout the Gospels people saying, Lord, have mercy. And then we are on the right track.
Did I guess since you're probably doing this with a number of people, and some of our listeners will be familiar and some not, I know we have a variety of listeners from a variety of backgrounds who have contacted us. How would you just briefly unpack that word mercy for someone who maybe doesn't get everything that comes with it?
Sure. Just, I would say the simplest and maybe then the best two way to say it would be, I guess I've explained it this way. When I was young, there was a game called Mercy. It was a game that you probably got stuck playing with your older brother if you were unlucky, or maybe you were the older brother and then you were a little more lucky. But if you got somebody into a position, whether it was their arm wrestled behind their back or just your younger brother in a very uncomfortable position, they just had to beg mercy. And then you would, with a show of might and for, you know, maybe demonstrate that I could do something worse to you, but I'm not going to. That's what we mean when we, as Christians, get to, and I mean get to, God wants us to ask him, you know, he expects us to expect this from him, that we know that he is divine and that we are not, and that we know, more importantly than anything else, that he is a God who very much is disposed to not doing toward us what he could do. And then it kind of leads into the word grace, I suppose, too. I can let you exposit on that one. But
well, Ziggy jumped up when you mentioned a younger brother and an older brother wrestling. Ziggy, did you have something you wanted to say?
That game definitely still is around.
Yeah. I feel less old, Ziggy. Thank you, sir.
And I did not know about it until he came to Wisconsin. But it's definitely painful.
Do you have scars, Ziggy?
No.
Okay.
Does it still favor the older brother?
Nicholas, as the apparent bully, would you like to speak to this?
We don't call this mercy. We call this fighting.
So Nicholas is not a man of mercy, as you can hear, but he is like the ancient gods of Canaan, that the unrelenting wrath, it sounds like.
You could say that.
Sophia, does Nicholas ever bully you? Sounds like he's a bully. Does he ever bully you or make you ask for mercy?
No.
He bullies all of us.
He bullies all of you? How does that make you feel, Sophie?
Well, I don't know.
You got to speak up now. Does it make you happy when he bullies you?
I don't know how to answer because it kind of makes me happy because I can get him in trouble.
Sophie, how do I bully you?
He punches me and kicks me.
He punches you and kicks you?
When have I ever done that to you, Sophie?
Anna, would you like to speak to this now that we've got Nicholas on the ropes? Does your brother ever bully you?
Yeah.
What does he do to you?
He punches and kicks and calls names.
I don't recall punching or kicking you ever. I have pushed you before, but that is because you are an instigator and a tattletale.
Oh, Nick looks like he's getting ready to fight right now.
That is true.
Anna, I have to say, Anna is the worst one, I think, in our family to pick a fight with, because when Anna gets mad, she gets unrelenting. She has the same gift as her mother. If she gets frustrated, she is going to assert herself, which I love about her mother. But it seems maybe we should have been dealing with Nicholas and not with Peter at the elders' meeting the other day. Aliva, what about in your family? Just briefly, we've got on a fun topic here. Kyle, we'll be right back. I think you're doing great things. But Aliva, is there any bullying or fighting happening in your family?
Among all my other sisters, yes. Among me? No, I'm just a perfect angel.
Perfect angel. Which of your sisters is the most aggressive physically?
The most aggressive physically? I don't think any of us are.
I'm going to answer for you. It's Edie.
That's what I was expecting to hear, too. And I love it about Edie.
Edith is our 3-year-old. Honestly, I think that it might be Beatrice, though. She's almost 2, but she, she's you know, unafraid and just jumps right in.
Edie goes around, when she doesn't get what she wants, she goes around hitting us. But Beezus just comes and hops in whenever she feels like it. So.
She likes the fight.
I baptized Edie, so that might explain some of what happens.
don't worry, we had that taken care of. We just wanted to make sure.
I was wondering why they had her baptized when they came and joined church up here. They must have been afraid the first one didn't take. You did remember to use water, right, Kyle?
As I recall, it is a little scarce here in Texas from time to time.
Drought year. I'm sorry for getting us a little distracted there. We just wanted to talk about something interesting. if I think a question I have, and Peter's familiar with what you guys are doing more, having belonged down there. But what do you run up against? You're as a church, you're worshiping and according to the historic liturgy, as many will know it in the hymnal. How do you find that being received? Do you find people are drawn to that from backgrounds that they're used to it, or what about people who've never seen it? What's their take on liturgical worship in an area that maybe that's not the norm?
It definitely runs the gamut. I mean, I certainly wish I could tell you everybody that comes in contact with it first just falls all over themselves for more, and that wouldn't be an accurate description. But I would say it's almost always distinct. Not everybody knows that they're looking, is looking for it, or necessarily even knows that they might want more of it. But it definitely is distinct, and that's an opportunity to start a conversation. And in many ways, if somebody walks in your door as a church for the first time, there's a reason they're not where they were before. And in many cases in Texas, that's probably who you're getting, is not somebody that's never been in a church before, but somebody that's not in the church that they grew up in, or the church that they and their family were most recently in. And so them noticing something different, or, maybe they would call it more serious. I don't know that may or may not be the case, but just that they notice that it's different is maybe the same, in the same way that I hope mercy, divine mercy, strikes them, is that it sort of invites a question. And if they don't bring it up, maybe I'll get a chance to as well. But
yeah. So Kyle, that's, that kind of brings up another question that I have for you. And that's, obviously, I kind of know where you're coming, where you come from, in your life and, theologically where you're coming from. What caused you primarily to decide, well, I'm starting a mission church in Texas, of course, I'll make it, a liturgical church instead of the more church growth method, have a praise band and start working on that. What were some of your thoughts as you made those decisions early on?
Well, first of all, me trying to do church any other way would be a complete disaster, and it might be a disaster
because
anyway,
of the shorts. Or...
yes, the pink shorts. More than anything else, it's the pink shorts. I call them salmon, but Wade keeps calling them pink, so we'll just say that. Maybe salmon makes me sound weirder than anything else.
No, keep saying that, please.
Yeah. No, really, I even asked when I got the call from a home mission board, not even trying to be a stickler, just kind of trying to be real with myself and with them. I just said, about the only way I'm going to know to go about this, or that I'm at all compelled to go about this, will be by, when it comes time to start having worship services, to do it, to do it this way. Because, well, in a lot of ways there's a philosophy to it. And for me to pretend that something else is going to serve the people that manage to come around, or the people that are already around, I would be pretending, and that would show up, more than anything else. And so I wasn't really able to think about it any other way. For that reason, it's very compelling to me that this is how I learned the faith, how by God's grace I'm still learning it, by and large. And so it's really the only way I think I stand a snowball's chance in Texas to communicate this to others as well.
One of the things with that, Kyle, and I think those, hopefully we wouldn't want to give the impression to those who maybe haven't had a liturgical background or know it as well as we do, that we're trying to hold up what we're used to or what we've done in the parish in any way to the detriment of their experience or what's been done. And obviously the gospel being proclaimed is the key thing. But as someone who also appreciates what we find in our hymnal and in our 2,000 years of heritage of the Western Rite, one of the things I think in a mission setting that could maybe be helpful about the liturgy, doing the same things or similar things week after week, but the ordinary staying the same, although the propers change, is the chance for catechesis in that people are learning the basics of the faith, but also B, for people to kind of grow into the community of faith, to get to know kind of the guideposts of what it is to be a Christian as they're marked out and baptismal reminders and with the Lord's Supper and the creeds. How do you find yourself, or do you find yourself using that beyond just an order of service, but as a tool for reaching out and forming people in the faith who maybe had not been exposed to it before, at least not Lutheranism?
Yeah, no, you're onto it. You maybe should be the one that's down here, Wade, instead of me even.
No,
but
there's snakes.
Oh, that's true. I did just find one underneath a downspout plate the other day, so I'll save the next one I find. But at any rate,
by the way, I don't think I can stay with you any longer when I come down for Reformation. I would prefer to be on the 30th floor of a hotel. Can snakes climb stairs? I'm assuming they can.
They can. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll find somewhere for you.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead though, Kyle.
No, we really. I mean, it ends up being. I maybe alluded to a joke earlier when we were going through the rivalry stuff, but maybe we'd be inclined to shy away from baptism because we know that there are other Christians with whom, at least as far as the practice goes, we differ from. But in many respects, that is exactly an outreach opportunity, is just to start talking about that. If somebody has little children, are they baptized? I have a couple who are. They're 65. They have two daughters. None of them had any background in Lutheranism growing up. Lots of background, maybe a little Pentecostal and some other. But so the mother and the father, 65 maybe, are members here. But their daughter has an 8-year-old and a 1-year-old now, and so she's inquiring right now about baptism. She's not a member, but this gives me an opportunity to talk with her about exactly what it is, but also what the Bible says it is, how that keeps getting fed, and not all churches are necessarily equal in terms of how baptism kind of keeps getting fed. And you were alluding to that maybe in some of the stuff that just comes up in worship. Is this pointing me to my baptism, or is it pointing me to me and what I think I accomplished perhaps by my baptism and so forth? So there is opportunity there. Maybe we shy away from it because we realize that in some instances it might shut people down, and that's certainly not a goal, but it will also open up a lot of opportunity to let grace be exactly that.
With that, if you were to think of, obviously there are other Lutherans and there's confessional Lutherans in Texas, but I'm sure that's not your target. You're not going down there to poach those who are. What do you see just looking around you? And feel free to answer Jesus if that's the best answer, but maybe something more specific. What do you see as being the chief thing a Lutheran voice has to contribute that maybe people aren't getting as much of otherwise when it comes to what Christianity really is? And what it is to be about.
Oh, maybe it ends up getting a little grammatical, but even in Bible study, and some of this is with people that have been Lutherans for long before I ever ended up serving as their pastor, but maybe just constantly drawing attention to the distinction of in Christianity, is Jesus primarily the subject of what's going on, or is he the object? Is he the one receiving stuff from us or giving stuff to us? And that, I mean, to be ultimately basic and also honest probably about where what we have to offer, rests, I think that's kind of it. Jesus for us, or us for Jesus, I suppose, says that better than anything else.
I think just a couple things, and then we've kept you for for a while, but having been Peter's pastor and knowing that, I did a little bit of research in the Great Dogmaticians that the confessional seal does not apply to podcasts. what is Peter's most interesting sin that he's ever spoken to you about?
I would be happy, so long as I know that the confessional seal doesn't apply to podcasts. I would be more than happy to divulge, except that I know Pete's mom too, and I respect her. I respect her far too much to say such things.
See, my mom's still protecting me.
Do you think Peter's mom would be willing to tell us Peter's most interesting sin?
I think his dad would.
Well, actually, I'm just joking because I know Peter's most interesting sins are yet in the future, which once again is why we preemptively excommunicated him. And I would hope that he would share them with me. Maybe even we can be on an adventure and commit them together sometime, have a podcast meeting out on the town. One last thing, and this goes back to our days in Michigan, Kyle. You might remember I was coming back from a pastor's conference one time and got a phone call that Anna had fallen over the railing on our stairs from the second floor to the first. And when Trisha found her, she had a mouthful of sweet tarts, and the boys had sweet tarts. And so thankfully she was fine, but my kids did stay for you with the night as we stayed in the hospital, and I don't even know that she even ended up with a concussion, but they were just kind of watching her, and so God was with her. She vehemently denied taking the boy's sweet tarts, although we found her with a mouth of full of sweet tarts. Do you think Anna took the boy's sweet tarts?
I think Anna did. I respect her for it. I even applaud her for it. Something tells me that was divine retribution working itself out through your daughter.
Yeah, after what we heard about Nicholas, if they were Nicholas's sweet tarts, perhaps it was karma. Anna, do you have anything to say with regard to the sweet tarts? Are you willing to own up to it at this point? And Anna's being shy. We do thank you for your time with us, Kyle, and we will be including information about the church in the show notes. Encourage our listeners to keep Kyle's work in Texas in their prayers if they so wish to do. And I believe you update the website somewhat frequently if they'd kind of like to follow along with the work of the congregation. Is that so, Kyle?
That's true. You can also find Divine Mercy if you're more of a Facebook presence at Divine Mercy Lutheran Church on Facebook as well. So thanks for having me. I'm pleased to have been here. My wife informed me. I don't know how she knows these things, but
did she inform you she wants to go to a Tigers game?
Hope springs eternal, Wade.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cal.
That'll happen when I get home. I'm sure she'll mention that. But no, she told me the other day that Sunday is National Naked Gardening Day, and I just thought, well, I don't know how you know that, but and I have a garden, and it is kind of a nice day. So my wife, more than anything else, thanks you for occupying my time this afternoon.
You mentioned Facebook. Is there any place else that that our listeners could go if they're interested in Divine Mercy? Do you post sermons or anything like that, or just on your website?
Sermons are on SoundCloud, so okay. You can find audios of sermons on SoundCloud as well. Also, if you search Divine Mercy Lutheran Church on SoundCloud, you can catch some audio of sermons there.
Great. Yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes as well then. Again, the show notes will be on letthebirdfly.com/8 if you're looking for those.
And Kyle, we kind of forgot to clue you in on how we normally end things, so we'll see if you can figure it out. But before we get to that point, just a reminder, if you have enjoyed the episode so far, we really would love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review us maybe on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, or TuneIn Radio, places like that. Also, consider liking us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter, although to be honest, I'm still trying to figure out Twitter beyond realizing there's a lot of angry people on there, although maybe we could give them one more thing to be angry about. But we do appreciate all of our listeners who have been sharing things so far and would encourage you or maybe beg you to keep doing so. Once again, as Peter said, we can also be found at letthebirdfly.com, and we can be reached at podcast@letthebirdfly.com. With that being said then, Kyle, as we let you get back to your work there at the mission in Texas and hopefully not to gardening, what's the only thing we can do as we find ourselves wherever we might be as shepherds of God's people or as witnesses to his grace?
Live freely in the world God has given back to us.
And?
Let the bird fly. fly.
There you go.
We got it.
We got it. You still did better than Dr. Brown did, and so we'll give you kudos for that. Thank you, Kyle.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jess.
Every evening when the sun goes down, get with my party and I begin to clown. I don't care what the people are thinking.